You're listening to the Tumbling Saber Podcast, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network, which also includes Talk Star Wars, Generation X-Wing, the Rogue Squadron Podcast, and the Skyhoppers Podcast. Visit StarWarsCommonwealth.com and subscribe to our shows in iTunes, and take your first steps into a larger world. Welcome to episode 50 of the Tumbling Saber Podcast. Thanks once again for checking in with us this week. And what a crazy week it's been, guys. This has been one of the most unfathomable weeks that we could possibly have imagined. Two Rogue One trailers dropped. But before we get to any of that, we just got to start with the crazy events of this week. I mean, it's something we've spoken about for a long time. We kind of joked about it. This would never happen. But it finally did this week. Michel Therrien actually benched David Desharnais. Can you believe it? It happened, guys. It really happened. And you guys are laughing as if I should be talking about something else. But really, what bigger, more surprising things happened this week than David Desharnais getting benched?
Nothing. That's actually the most surprising news in the world this week, amongst all the surprising news. That is the most surprising.
Absolutely it is. I was shocked and dismayed that Therrien actually did it.
I wasn't dismayed at all. I was happy. I was like, wow, there is something that the coach will do at some point to show that this player is not beyond reproach, can be disciplined, is not always going to be a fixture on the first line. Ridiculous.
It took a number of years and several hundred hockey games, but it did happen. This little guy finally had to sit in the press box for a night and think about his quality of play. But in all seriousness, really what a week it's been. It's 1 month, basically, until Rogue One, guys. Let me introduce the guys. Corey, how you doing tonight?
Not too bad, Kyle. It's been quite a lovely weekend.
It really has. We lucked out in the weather department, that's for sure. James, how you doing? I hear the throat's not doing so well this week.
That's my tongue. Strep throat, but it's specifically my tongue. It's been swollen and sore, and now it's really, really gross. If anybody wants to know what's going on in my mouth, just Google search strep throat strawberry tongue. It's like that's the term, the medical term. I warn you, though, you're gonna look at your screen and then maybe throw up a little bit.
I'm doing it now, right now. If you were still recording the epic rap battle, the Commonwealth rap battle, would you have been able to swing it, or is you would have had to have begged off, put me on the healthy scratch list?
That's a good question. My voice itself hasn't really been that affected. Although yesterday I couldn't fully move my tongue to articulate words; it was too swollen. So I'd say I'd probably postpone any kind of lyrical gymnastics.
Fair enough.
Yeah, whatever. It is what it is. It's strep throat. It's not a big deal. But because I'm a male, I'm man colding this up pretty good, and I've been complaining a lot all weekend.
Nice.
I got two kids with pink eye too, so we're a household of sick and miserable. But hey,
this too shall pass.
At least Donald Trump's not president.
Not yet. Oh man! Well, let's skip over that beehive of controversy.
I didn't want to talk about it either. I'm glad we're not going to dwell there, because that's all anybody's been talking about all week, myself included. But yeah, let's move on to something else. Hey, just quickly, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I learned this week. If your shirt's not tucked into your pants are tucked into your shirt.
Whoa!
Interesting.
Just saying.
Yeah, Before we get to any Star Wars, let's pause here and announce the latest members of the Star Wars Commonwealth community. It's the Skyhoppers Podcast, They're in, baby. So they've joined as of late last week. And just Google them. Skyhopper Podcast. You'll find them. I should probably be a more complete showrunner here and have their all their info listed for you, but I am not and I don't. But here, let me see how my Google friend here will help us out. Skyhopper Podcast.
While you're doing that, I'll sidebar. Did you know Super Bowl 50 is not using Roman letterial this year? Roman numerals this year?
I could see that. I had to Google it because for the show, I was like, I'm just curious. You know, what's the Roman numeral for 50? And it was like L, and I'm like, well, that's lame. L for lame.
Well, that's what the Super Bowl committee thinks too, and so they're going with just the number 50 this year for their symbol. First time since Super Bowl 5.
That's crazy.
Well, it would look pretty dumb, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just an L.
Yeah. No, that's a good call. Of all the dumb things the NFL does, oh, that's a good call. And James, our Dolphins are 5-4.
Yeah, don't worry. They'll finish 8-8.
They'll find a way to screw it up. So anyway, back to the Skyhoppers. Here we go. They're at SW Skyhoppers on Twitter. And you can find them individually at Ferretitiously. I'm not going to spell that. And at Ursa, I can't even say that. Jeez, that's a tough handle. But anyway, it's a very fun podcast. Would you like me to spell it? Would that help you guys?
No,
I want you to try to say it, and after that, say randomitable.
No, I can't. Ursatsash. I get it. Ursatsash. That's not so hard.
No, it's na-i-nanajar. Na-i-nanajar. Not that difficult.
So Sarah and Ben have a great little podcast. We've roped them into the Star Wars Commonwealth. We're so happy that they've decided to join us. I've been listening to their show for a few months. And very enjoyable. A lot of fun. Very easy voices to get into. Good conversations. You can never have too much Star Wars in your earballs, so check them out.
Well, I've been super busy with the three little nerfs that I heard around here. But correct me if I'm – so I haven't listened yet. I'm going to catch up, do a little binging this week. But this is our first member of the Commonwealth of the fairer sex. Am I wrong?
Yes, we finally actually have a lady on board, which is a huge relief. Because I don't have – I have zero female friends that are into Star Wars. Zero.
Oh, I have one. I have one who just recently sold a basement's worth of collector memorabilia, from posters to toys. She had shelves and shelves and shelves. She's like my age, 40.
How did Kyle and I not find out about this?
That's a fair point. Shame on me.
Indeed.
My bank account thanks you for your forgetfulness.
No, it was before we were doing the podcast. I say she just did it, but she probably did this 2 or 3 years ago now. But that's I do have one female friend who's a massive, massive fan.
Well, then maybe we should get her on the show.
I should. Andrea Venditti. You know what? I will. We'll make good on that promise, because she would be great on this show.
We'll put together a little contract offer, and we'll have our people speak to her people, and we'll see what she says.
I think Donnie Meehan looks after her. I'll call Donnie in the morning.
She'll be sold Fair when enough. She hears about the green room.
Yeah, it'll be the big bowl of Skittles that sets us apart. So welcome, Skyhoppers. Glad to have you guys aboard. Check them out on iTunes and Stitcher. And again, at SW Skyhoppers on Twitter. That seems to be the place, right? Twitter. It's the easiest place to contact somebody. Like, everybody's got a Twitter account, right?
Even me now.
Yeah, even James has one. Kicking and screaming we brought into Twitter, but you're there.
Thanks, Corey.
Yeah, that's true, eh? Well, me too. I'm still relatively new to the whole thing. I think I got on in April of last year, and it's definitely, it's all Star Wars all the time on my feed.
Well, I'll say this. If there's no Twitter, then there's no Tumbling Saber. Like, Twitter is the first sort of seed, for me anyway, as a content creator, so to speak, that was the first domino. Then it became a blog. for somebody else. Then it became my own blog, and then it became radio spots, and then it became a switch from sports to Star Wars, and yada, yada, yada. Here we are at episode 50.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, Twitter has opened many doors. For all the slings and arrows that people say that, you know, Twitter's stupid, and who needs to know that someone's having a bowl of Rice Krispies this morning? Like, Twitter's opened so many doors for me. I get so much value out of it. The day it shuts is the day I will cry myself to sleep. But anyway, on to happier things. Like I said, 1 month until Rogue One, essentially, and a bunch of things to talk about this week. Start with the quickest thing is the new Rogue One poster, which I thought was awesome. It was the Mexican one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And James, I think you've been sort of lukewarm on most of the posters, but I think you dug this one.
I did. I thought this was a good poster. I think I gave it an official score of 7.5 on 10 on my imaginary scale of posters. But I did. I like this poster. I thought it was not only good looking in terms of like a movie poster, but it somehow had a classic Star Wars feel for me.
It did, for sure. I think a lot of that has to do with the temples of Yavin 4.
That's what I was going to say.
Very smart, too. Very smart to use that scenery from that part of the world as the Mexican poster. Like, very smart to play to your audience that way.
Agreed.
True.
Yeah.
So between that one and the Russian poster, those are two posters that I can easily see hanging on my wall.
The Russian poster, like, made my list of best Star Wars posters ever, so I totally agree with you on that one. This one's not that good. Yeah, not in my opinion. I like the Russian one.
It's not as unique.
Was better. Yeah.
Like this one, it's still very collagey, but it's quite well done. This one has, there's movement to it, even though it's a collage.
Yeah, like you got the clump of characters all together, which is kind of like stereotypical, I guess. And you got your Death Star there. No Vader this time, but you know, you still get the Death Star, a few Star Destroyers. But the temples and the landscapes do help set it off.
Yeah, it's the framing of it. You know the way they've angled the characters, angled the landscape. It gives that feeling of movement to the poster, which I don't think has been there for the others.
I think that's a good point. And maybe the no Vader is part of what I like about it. Not that I don't love Vader in posters, but a lot of them I feel like they were trying too hard to like...
get him in there?
Use the meal ticket.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy, right? Throw Darth Vader in and voila, you got a Star Wars poster. So it's nice to see them do a little bit of work and try and make a great piece without having to lean on that automatic marketing lock.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so let's moving on here. This week we've got some news. Corey added this to the show notes. Episode 9 to be shot in 65mm film. I don't know what it means. I just figure that means a higher resolution print. Very, very fitting for a large-scale action movie that Colin Trevorrow is going to give us. And I don't know, Corey, do you have anything else you want to say about that?
Well, it kind of just reminded me of what they had said while filming Rogue One in 65mm, that they just saw so many beautiful shots that they thought, you know, wouldn't be possible had they been filming digitally or whatever. So, like you said, you know, he's looking to make like a pretty big action movie, so this kind of plays into that. And I think we're going to be in for another treat.
Yeah, so he's brought in, I think, specifically because he's a guy that just does big action really well. And so I think this plays to his strength, which is good to see. They're giving the guy the tools he needs to put his best vision out there. And moving on again very quickly, James Luceno's Catalyst, a Rogue One prequel novel. It comes out this Tuesday. So I'm going to have my lovely wife head over to the bookstore. She doesn't know this yet. Hopefully she will agree. She works around the corner from a bookstore in downtown Montreal, so I will ask her very kindly to jump on over there, pick it up on Tuesday, and bring it on home, because I need to get into that book in a big way. And then I can spoil it here. And lastly, but not leastly.
You can't spoil it for Corey. Corey's probably going to beat you to the end.
Oh, is that so? That's true, Corey.
Challenge accepted, Corey.
Corey is notoriously quick with the novel reading.
I've been having a hard time with Aftermath, to be honest. But I was thinking about this the other day. Like,
wait a minute. Wait, hold on a second.
Not Aftermath. Sorry. Bloodline. Sorry. I've been having a bit of trouble with that one.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I just, like I said, I haven't read a book in like 8 months, you know, so it's been hard to get into.
You forgot how to read?
No, but the habit's not as strong as
it used
to be.
You had to think about whether or not you forgot how to read.
No, I just had to think about why it's taking me so long. But either way, regardless, like I was thinking about, I want to sit down at one point and kind of put in order, like chronologically with the time span that I have left, like what books should be read and why. Like Catalyst would be pretty big if you want to see Rogue One, right?
Well, at your pace, you would have had to start Catalyst 6 months ago.
It depends. Once I'm into something, it doesn't take too long. But like I said, it's a matter of habit, really.
And lastly, I'm very much looking forward to Catalyst. It sounds like it's going to be a really, really nugget-filled book and a good one, too, because James Luceno has done some great work. His Legend stuff I haven't read, although I heard great things about the Darth Plagueis novel. I think he did that one. And he also did the novelization to Revenge of the Sith and the a Vader book or a Grievous book that took place right before Revenge of the Sith, which was also really good. So that's that. That comes out Tuesday. And lastly, from MakingStarWars.net, they had a little snippet from Alden Ehrenreich, who confirmed that Chewie was going to be in the Han Solo spinoff film, which is a surprise to absolutely nobody. So we'll see a slightly younger Chewbacca in this movie. Anybody here surprised by that?
No, it's nice that I have confirmation, though.
No. That's the least newsworthy news. It's not news at all. That's like telling us that it's going to also happen in space.
Yep, pretty much. Okay, so let's now with those quick little things out of the way, we can move into some real news. And this week we got treated to a double dose of international Rogue One trailers. And we're not going to do shot-by-shot breakdowns. I think that's kind of played out. And there's lots of places you can go to if you want to hear shot-by-shot breakdowns of stuff you've already seen. But there's a few things we just want to flesh out, things that we thought were cool. Corey, what did you find? We're going to talk about both as lumped into one, so you don't need to separate one from the other if you don't want. But things that you found cool coming out of these two trailers.
The coolest thing, I think everyone's going to be on the same page here, is we finally get to see Jin's mom, and she gives her what clearly seems to be a kyber crystal. And we also saw something I had forwarded to you guys. I don't know if you had seen it, but there's the Orabesh. Something's written on the kyber crystal in the Orabesh.
And yeah, it's like a laser force engraving.
Yeah. And it says force when translated. So thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't see, I mean, who knows what it means, but I didn't see that coming. And it's a cool little breadcrumb. Well, let's play with that for a second. So is that just an ordinary kyber crystal, or is that a piece of the crystal that powers the Death Star that her father kind of chipped off and gave to her?
I don't know.
Yes, that's what I thought.
It looks more
you
like
you thought
it's
that, James? You think it's a chip off the old Death Star block?
I think it has something to do with her her father. Either it's one of the set, it's the smaller sister, it's a piece of... That's what I thought when I watched that scene. I thought, oh, that particular kyber crystal is going to do bad things. Yeah, I think it's. I'm more impressed really with this. Oh, by the way, I watched this trailer. I know you guys know that, but I've been making a point to tell everybody that I'm not going to watch any trailers.
That's right. That is kind of newsworthy. But,
it's funny. I meant to only look for, because we talked online after the trailer came out, and you said, you know, be careful. There's an image online that you're gonna have a hard time avoiding, and it was, you know, basically I said, oh, if I'm not gonna be able to avoid it, you can tell me what the shot is, and you said, I think I guessed, does it fire? And you said it bleeping fires, talking about the Death Star. So I wanted to see that still shot, and I went looking for it. And so I found the trailer, and it wasn't the first shot in the trailer. And so I sort of watched the first few seconds and then thought, ah, I'm already here. This is a pretty good pitch. Might as well take a swing. And I just jumped in and watched the whole trailer.
Yeah, I mean, not too much new. But again, if you're one to just want to have the visuals fresh.
A lot of great visuals in this. Even just the opening scene where she's running along you get that pan shot along the beach and she's young Jin's running. Like all that stuff to see for the first time in theater is pretty epic. But it's done now, and it was a really cool trailer.
Yeah, really well done. These trailers do nothing but raise the bar for me, man.
You know what's funny? I don't know if you did it, James, but I watched the international trailer, but I didn't see the South Korean trailer.
No, me either. Funny, eh?
Yeah. Did you ever go back and watch the trailer before this one?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't know that I will.
The South Korean trailer didn't have much. If you saw the international one, you can skip the South Korean one and not have really missed anything except for a few new shots. So if you stayed away this long, don't bother watching. Save yourself the spoilers, the mild spoilers.
Yeah, I think I probably will.
But I'm happy to see. I mean, I don't know how many people expected the Death Star to fire. I guess now in hindsight, obviously it's a foregone conclusion and probably seems like a no-brainer. But go back 6 months into the summer, it was sort of a toss-up. Will it or won't it? And people were kind of split. They weren't sure. I wrote a blog piece back in July, you know, saying the same thing, that I think it's going to fire. I think for this movie to work, for the Death Star as a threat in this movie to work and make this movie satisfying on its own, the Death Star has to fire. And that might tinker with how we see the Death Star in A New Hope, but I figured the right thing for Rogue One was for the Death Star to do its thing. But I thought it was going to trash Scarif. I did not know it was going to be Jeddah feeling the pain. But it looks like they dial it up to 3 or 4 on the scale of 10 and say goodbye to that old Jedi homeland.
Yeah, I was on the same page as you. Like I figured, like again, like just to play on words, it was more a test, or you know, we don't even know where Jeddah is on the galactic map yet, really. So,
like, well, there's that new Star Wars Atlas book out. So we probably do.
Because I tried to Google it today, and there was nothing. I thought maybe because the film hasn't been released yet that information is privy or whatever, but who knows?
Yeah, it's out there. I assume that Jeddah is going to be in that Star Wars Atlas book, but I don't know yet. So, I mean, that was really it. But I think one of the takeaways... Actually, you know what? Before I really start to move on from this, did you guys notice that shot of Vader, the way his finger was curled, as if he was just picking his nose?
Yeah, no. I did.
Like right at the very end. So that looks to me from the scene where the Ben Mendelsohn character, Director Krennic, is sort of at Vader's mercy as Vader comes charging toward him. I wonder if that's the end of Director Krennic right there, who gets the old force choke.
Yeah, it's true. He's obsessed with the power of the that battle station, you know, and already in A New Hope, like, Vader's telling them, like, this battle station is insignificant next to the power of the force, you know?
Yeah, they seem to be playing with that a little bit. But I think one of the things that I've taken away from both of these trailers is I've always said that, you know, last week I think we spoke about our favorite ships. Steve Lewis out in Vancouver, or in Victoria, excuse me, asked us our favorite ships. And again, I reiterated my love for the X-Wing. And what I get from these two trailers, from what we've seen of the X-Wing, the dogfights out in space above Scarif, I'm going to end up doubling down or tripling down on my love for X-Wings in this movie. They look so good. Those dogfights, they look like they're putting together, just look amazing.
Yeah, that's one thing that makes me really happy about this movie. Like, I didn't know how much space battles we were going to get to see, you know, and I think that's something that was really lacking in The Force Awakens. But, oh, man. Like, did you see that one scene where... I saw it on Twitter, too, but I saw it the exact same thing when I saw it. Like, it almost looks like he's flying into the atmosphere of a planet where, like, with, like, space balls where, like, you know, the atmosphere's that shield's, like, opening for them.
The airlock.
Yeah. Druidia.
Yeah, so anyway, a month to go, guys. Probably about 2 weeks from now, the tickets will be on sale. And then the final countdown will surely be on.
Tickets have gone on sale in parts of the world.
That's true.
I saw someone on Twitter yesterday or the day before saying that that she had bought her tickets.
Yep, that's true.
You know, it's odd. I was actually at the movie theater today, and you know, I was walking around, and I looked the whole Cineplex, the whole Coliseum, and there was no Rogue One poster.
There is something wrong with our part of the world. There is something really wrong with our part of the world with this whole new Star Wars thing. And it's infuriating. The buzz just is not there. But we'll bring the buzz. That's what we're going to do here.
Hell yeah. I can't wait till opening night. Oh, just thinking about it.
You're probably thinking about dinner that you're going to have.
No, I'm actually kind of worried that I hope I don't feel the way I felt during The Force Awakens.
Or were you sick?
No, I remember I told you. I was like, I felt like I was almost like having a panic attack.
Oh, yeah. As like, if dude, it was your movie that was being screened and people were going to be judging you.
I don't know what it was. It was so odd. Like, I my chest was constricted. I almost like, it was bad. It was really bad. I was squirmy. I didn't feel well at all.
Well, having gone through it now, you'll be fine this time around.
Fingers crossed.
All right, so let's talk about Chirrut Imwe. So MakingStarWars.net, they highlighted a cool piece that was from Jet Set Magazine. And they profiled Donnie Yen, and they talked a whole lot about the character of Chirrut and how he had a lot of input into bringing this character to life. So one of the things that Donnie Yen said is that, quote, when you hire me, you're not just getting an actor, you're getting a choreographer, a director. And he likened it to watching Michael Jackson in the documentary This Is It. And it goes on, but I think I've only seen one Donnie Yen movie, so shame on me, I don't know the guy that well, but apparently the guy's a legend. But I'm glad that they brought in, or were comfortable bringing in a guy who just isn't going to be an actor who just go there, read your line, go from that spot to that spot, and do as you're told. He's a guy who's going to provide feedback to the director and the cinematographer and all this stuff. James, is that a good idea to have guys coming in who may clash with creatively?
I think it is. Did you like Darth Maul?
I like Darth Maul.
I did too. And I think Ray Park sort of brought a lot of the same, skill set to the table in terms of feedback, in terms of expertise, in terms of, you know, his own vision. So, he was hired as a choreographer as well as an actor. But yeah, I think having guys who, I think if the actors are experts in setting up action sequences in more than just delivering lines, then you're probably setting up for a better movie, even if that means, you know, you butt heads a little more along the way when you're making it.
Yeah, and it should make for a better product, you would think.
I would think so. And everything I've seen from this character so far is super awesome. The idea that a blind person could be a skilled warrior is not a stretch at all in a force-laden world, right?
Yeah, and I mean, even in cinema that we've already seen, that Donnie Yen has probably been in, there's been the blind monk warriors types, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just touching back what you guys had said earlier about like Disney giving him this kind of like leeway or freedom, if you will. Like, they also do their homework on people like this. Like, like all studios are definitely going to do homework, and they're going to characterize their actors and like, this guy's a threat, this guy's a wild card, like this guy's solid, like he's on set every day, don't worry about it. So like they do their homework in that regard. So if he's not like a hothead and, you know, he's professional, then for sure give him a chance to at least speak. And if your idea is good, then hey, you know what, that works for the film, and looks like he had a few good ideas.
Yeah, at the same time, I don't think you can have too many of those guys, right? You have to be careful of who you choose to, that's going to be, how many guys can you have that bring that mindset where they're going to try and influence or make things better on their own? Like, I think almost like in a sports team, if you have too many captains, like who's the real captain, and you get that sort of weird dynamic.
So I agree.
Yeah,
but it depends on the role too. His role lends itself to that situation more than, you know, somebody who plays a more generic character who doesn't have, like, Shiroot's got this amazing skill set, this blind super warrior. So like, it makes sense for the actor who plays him to sort of have an idea as to how to choreograph and how to set up this guy's scenes. Whereas if you're playing, you know, a gunner or any other character who doesn't do special things, then it's much less important to have special input or feedback.
Well, one thing I really find interesting is that the fact that, I mean, in this article, he basically states that him being blind in this movie, it was basically his idea, which says a lot. Like, seriously, like, you got to write the whole script around that at that point. You know what I mean? Like, what kind of other character did they have in mind for him had he not been blind?
Yeah,
it would make your article that you wrote even more interesting, actually, if he wasn't blind.
yeah, we'll get to that. One of the things I thought was interesting is that he almost turned down the role for the sole reason that he didn't want to be away from his family for 5 months. But then he mentioned to his kids that he had the opportunity to do a Star Wars movie. And I don't know if he asked permission to do it, but he said they flipped out when he told him that he could be in Star Wars. He was offered the chance to do Star Wars, and they kind of just said, "Yeah, you're doing it. Go." So as three dads here on this podcast, I think that's something we can relate to. Like, can you even imagine? Like, what would it take to get you to be away from your family for 5 months?
I don't think
Star Wars movie.
Yeah, exactly. But even at that, like, you know, if they want you in the movie bad enough, like, I don't think you're going 5 months without seeing them. You know, you're gonna be like, okay, it's the second week, fly my family out. You know.
Well, yeah, there's a break in your schedule, like a 3 or 4 day break, where you just take a quick flight home or something like that, or you meet your family somewhere if you can't get all the way back across the world. Or again, maybe. Well, if he's got kids, they need to be in school. You just can't yank them out of school because you want to hang out with them for a bit. I'm sure it's incredibly
everything's
complex.
Everything's doable.
Yeah, when you're rich, like, everybody's if you have that kind of money,
priorities,
like,
are different too.
Private
yeah.
tutors, private jets. Let's go Disney. Shell out.
I don't know. I don't know if I would. How hard I would press on those buttons.
No, but even at. Even not at their expense, like if I was hired on a project, whatever it was, if my work, Star Wars film or other, required me to be away from home for 5 months, for me to make that work in my personal sitch, my personal priority set, I would do something like, you know, rent a Winnebago and have my family live near set or live near the job for those months. Like, we would make it work just because my family's a priority.
Yeah,
some
you rent the house.
Being away
you
from
rent
their
the house out there
months,
or something,
you know?
And you know you live.
Well, that's what I mean. Like
in your Winnebago, like on set, you know.
We would figure out a way. I wouldn't go 5 months without seeing my family. That's just not a realistic consideration for me. There's no real job that I. You know, we would find a way to not have that be a problem. And anybody who has those same priorities, I think, just sort of does that. You know.
Yeah, I imagine you probably don't have a lot of time to make it work, though. So you're offered the role and you have, I don't know how long. So you take the role and then you get to work. Say, how do we make this work so that you guys we can see each other at least, you know, once a week or every couple weeks. you know, I can't stomach the thought of being 5 months away. So yeah, you got to think about how old your kids are. Can they be pulled out of school? Can you get a tutor? Do they even want to go? Maybe they're at the age where their priority is hanging out with their teenage friends. And hell no, I'm not leaving my social circle for 5 months. It's bound to get really complicated. Like Donnie Yen's 53. I'm sure his kids are teenagers. I have no idea if they are or aren't, but there's obvious, I think, pushback with teenagers if you try to pull them away from their friends. So I it's got to be a complicated thing.
Oh, for sure. It's there's so many variables that you can't really, you know, in our situation now, babies, adolescents, it's all different.
Yeah, I think the smart move is accept the role and then deal with the rest later. But like according to Yen, he almost turned it down. Which is,
it's funny. Just quickly, but that story is exactly like the guy who played Aragorn, who's Viggo Mortensen. He was like, no, they offered him the role. I don't know if he auditioned or if they even just offered it to him like without an audition. Like, we want you. And he's like, no, not interested. And his kid was a huge Lord of the Rings fan and was like, Dad, I'm disowning you as a father if you don't take that role. In fact, I even think his kid was like hired as a consultant, like a Tolkien expert. Not hired, but like I think he had input on the script and the movies. The 13-year-old kid did. Because
so cool.
he knew the story that well. Yeah.
That's amazing. Kind of reminds me of the Oscar Isaac story. Where they shot, I think they shot some scenes of The Force Awakens. The resistance base is in Guatemala, I want to say. And Oscar Isaac's uncle is a massive Star Wars fan, going back to the original movies. And when he learned that his nephew Oscar had gotten the role, he went nuts. And then they learned that they were doing shooting in his country, and he went doubly nuts. And so Oscar, and Corey, this kind of speaks to the story we talked about a few weeks ago about what we would do to be extras and how hard how many buttons we'd press and how many people we'd annoy. Well, this is Oscar Isaac's uncle, who's a devoted lifelong Star Wars nut. And the best that Oscar Isaac could pull was to have him suited up as an alien and stuffed into the background. Now imagine if yeah. That's what he was able to arrange.
It's all good.
But it would be different for me.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, don't forget, Corey's got us with Star Wars Land shut down for a day when we show up. So big dreams. We're going places.
Anyway, I love that story. I think it's a really cool story because he was so excited. He showed up to the set and he had, I forget, my wife keeps telling me this story and I keep forgetting the details, but Oscar Isaac's uncle had made up t-shirts and they were really funny ones too for everybody, all the cast and crew. He had t-shirts made up and gave them out to everybody on set. He was so excited about the whole thing. And I don't know if it was as a thank you or if it was already prearranged, but they said, hey, let's stuff him into an alien suit and throw him in the background. But that's the kind of connections you need to have if you want to get into a Star Wars movie. And last I checked, I don't
know. No, come on. There's no way. Even James Bond was just a stormtrooper. He had a line, which is a huge deal, but that's James Bond. There's no way. There's just no way.
Yeah.
That unless you know a lot of people, you're getting any screen time in a Star Wars movie.
And the thing with James Bond is that they were shooting. I forget which James Bond movie it was. I don't know if it was Spectre or the one that just came out not too long ago. But they were shooting that at the same time as The Force Awakens. At I think it's at Pinewood. So one day I want to say like a lunch break, Daniel Craig just shot over there, threw on a stormtrooper suit, read his line and took off. And that was that. At least I think that's how the story goes.
You know, John Stewart was almost in The Force Awakens, but he didn't want to play a bad guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's holding out till he can get to play a good guy, right?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, back to the story at hand here. So we'll bleed into my blog piece, my most recent one.
Yeah,
note here.
This is interesting.
So the most interesting bit, on StarWars.com, it says that that Chirrut, quote, lacks Force abilities. And then back in this Jet Set article, They say that he is not force sensitive. And so here we start running into semantics and maybe a lack of understanding. But George Lucas has said in the past, and in my blog, I took a picture of the page where he says this. So it's there. George Lucas has said that everyone can use the Force. So it's just a matter of commitment to being a Jedi. So that would mean everybody is Force sensitive, including people we thought of as not being Force sensitive, like Han Solo. You can be, but no one's shown you the way, or I mean that's or you just haven't practiced enough. So I got to thinking about Chirrut. Why isn't this guy a Jedi? He's got the midichlorians, obviously. He's got the connection to the Force. He's got the whole dedication thing down. He's that part of his description in the Star Wars databank is that he's been lifelong devotee of the Jedi and the ways of the Force. So put those two things together. Why isn't he a Jedi? I don't understand. And so I try to reverse engineer it. and like I said a few minutes ago, Donnie Yen is 53. So how old is Chirrut? Like I said, what's the youngest he could possibly be in this movie? And I came in and around 40. So he might be older. He might be a little bit younger, which I think is pushing it. But can we agree that he's 40, or do we want to play with that number a bit?
No.
40's fine as a reference point. The actor's 53. There's got to be, you know, he's not playing a 19-year-old. Or if he is, they've got to explain some sort of, you know, genetic thing into his character. So 40, 45 is probably a safe guess for how old Chirrut is.
Perfect. That's exactly my point. So if we backtrack to when Donnie Chirrut was a young child at the age where the Jedi do the recruiting, this is well before the Clone Wars, well before the Phantom Menace. So something, I don't know. This is where I'm lost. Maybe he just doesn't have enough midichlorians to sort of signal to the Jedi that he's a potential recruit. But something about this isn't right. To me, this guy should be a Jedi, and I can't figure out why. Because everything in the StarWars.com databank, they've said that he lacks Force abilities. Now, is that different from being Force-sensitive? Is this where semantics comes in?
Exactly. Like, Force-sensitive, okay. Like you said, he basically doesn't make the cut. When you see them measuring, everyone has a bit of midichlorian in them, some more than others. I guess he doesn't really meet the criteria to be noticed on that Jedi scale, where they basically say like, it'd be a little too hard for him to get there, kind of. He just doesn't have enough of it in him. And my second theory would kind of be...
Which I hate so much. I hate that about the midichlorians so much.
Well, I'm sure the writers now do too, because it really threw a monkey wrench into all the writing they have to do now. And I think that's what they're trying to do
it
also. Is like,
sucks. The Jedis are chosen. You're born a Jedi or you're not. That's such bogus BS.
Well, I think that what it is, they measure their blood count or whatever when they're born, right? And say like, okay, like you have potential,
yeah.
You don't.
Or you don't. You're either a Jedi or you're not, like, genetically, which is... that's just never how I imagined or played with it when I made believe when I was a kid.
Well, that's what I almost feel, you know? Like. They're almost kind of trying to retcon that now. They're trying to get away from the midichlorian thing. We haven't heard about midichlorians in a long time, except maybe on podcasts, but...
And you probably never will again.
Well, that's the whole thing. I think they're trying to step away from that, and going back to that, basically, in Kyle's blog post, you had that interview, right? With Lucas and his original vision for what the Jedi were. So
yeah, I mean, there's no getting around it. Like, everybody is, and let's, you, me, James, all of us are Force sensitive. If we're in the Star Wars galaxy, we're all there. We just, it would be a choice of whether or not we wanted to commit to it. So that's no longer, that's off the table. Now we can all be Jedi if we just work at it enough and have somebody to teach us.
No, I don't think anyone said that. Specifically,
no, George Lucas said that.
Yeah, that was back in the day until he brought up the word midichlorian to it. Like, he wrote himself into a corner.
I think it's pretty clear that George Lucas has said if you have them, like, you can be a Jedi. Anybody can be a Jedi, is what he's saying.
My second kind of plausible possible theory or explanation would be, we don't know much about Jedha. Like, I don't know, like, you seem pretty keen on, you know, the Galactic or the Republic basically knowing about this planet, whereas I'm like, I don't know, it seems kind of ancient and lost in the sands of time, whatever. So, like, maybe and I said again today, I tried to search it out on the Galactic map in the Star Wars universe, and I couldn't find it. And my theory was basically that it's an outer rim planet, and, you know, it's just those planets aren't really cared about too much, and not really, maybe he wasn't part of the Republic systems and wasn't scanned as a baby, kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. This one is baffling to me. I think this is...
Well, and do we know when he went blind?
No. And that's
so maybe he was injured when they were scanned.
Maybe they saw, oh, geez, low midichlorians, you're blind. Forget it, kid. Like, it's too much of a hill to climb for you. Which maybe what will make Chirrut special. He was rejected by the Jedi, yet he still believes in them.
True. The blindness could be is like, you know, it could see that thing like, you know, oh, he's blind. Like, just, this is going to be a little too hard.
And one of the things I wondered is part of the downfall of the Jedi, again, the arrogance that they showed throughout the prequels, that they even called themselves on for. Could they? Is it maybe because they themselves forgot about Jedha, and anybody who was there just fell through the cracks? Like they like, oh man, we're the Jedi. We've stamped out the Sith. We've got everything, you know. Everything's coming up Jedi in the galaxy. Let's move to Coruscant and set up cushy digs there. That sounds like a great plan. Let's leave this dust bowl. And so they do. And over time, over hundreds or maybe even a thousand years, they forget all about Jedha and everybody who's on it. And here's this guy named Chirrut who would have been a perfectly fine Jedi if only they had not turned their back on the planet. And that works, I suppose, but it's also kind of thin. Unless they have a good reason for turning their back on it.
I'm kind of that, I don't know. Basically, I would have liked to have heard about it. Like, it's a mecca for the Jedi. So, to me, not having seen that in the prequels or even heard of it prior, and the images we've seen, I really, seems to me like a dust bowl, again, that's lost in space.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, but I am convinced that this is... It's not a problem. But given what we know about Force sensitivity and what George Lucas originally planned, to me, Chirrut should be a Jedi. And if he's... Obviously, he's not. We need a good explanation as to why.
You know, maybe when this movie ends, maybe people will look at him as a Jedi in a way, you know?
Yeah. Yep, maybe. All right. Well, I think we kind of beat Donnie Yen up enough here, in a good way, in a very loving way. I think he's going to be a really fascinating character, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of him and Baze in spin-off materials. But moving right along, it's time once again to check in with Ads, and let's hear what Ads has got planned for us this week.
Good evening, boys. May I start by wishing the three of you a very happy anniversary. 50 great shows already in the can, and here's to the next 50. Now, by the time you record this show, you'll have about 68 days or so until President Trump gains control of the nuclear warheads, and so we better make the most of it. As such, I've prepared, again, two questions. The first of these, I hope, will allow for a more general discussion. I wonder whether in our lifetimes we will ever see a story as big and generation-spanning as Star Wars has been. In perhaps 30, 40 years' time, cinemas, I suspect, will be full of 70 and 80-year-olds, along with the next generation of children watching the latest installment. I can't personally think of another original film or set of films that has had a similar longevity with room to continue expanding, developing and appealing to new audiences and to old alike. For example, the 1977 film, in my opinion, stands the test of time. My kids, my boys, absolutely love it. And they love it just as much as the more modern ones. So yeah, let us know your thoughts on that one. Now my second question is one actually for Corey alone. And influenced by his very funny, very amusing views on how to get noticed and hopefully appear in a forthcoming Star Wars film. I'm wondering, Corey, whether in a hypothetical situation, should you in the future win a competition to not only play a role in the next Star Wars film, but a minor speaking role at that? So you wait patiently for the postman to deliver the script, and you open it up, and you find that your line is, "Fair play to the rust bucket, he put up a good fight." And then underneath, in brackets, it says, "Officer one presses button on machine that crushes chopper permanently." So, Corey, you get your wish to be in a Star Wars film, but you are forever known as the person who killed Chopper. Have a great show, boys. Take care. See you next week. Bye.
And there goes ads. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for the kind words and 50 episodes in the books. And hopefully we will get at least another 50 up there for you, for everybody out there. And so on to the meat of the question. Ads is asking us about, can we foresee a day where a Hollywood franchise becomes as big and generation spanning as Star Wars? James, haven't heard from you in a couple minutes there. So what do you think? Is it possible in our lifetime that we'll see another movie have as long ranging and deep impact as Star Wars? Is that in the cards here?
You know, the easy answer is no, because Star Wars is so massive, but I actually think we're in the midst of seeing one, sort of a phoenix rising right now that's going to be just enormous. And that's the Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, they just had a movie come out this weekend, right?
Yes, they did. And I think, and it's sort of, it's almost Rogue One-esque in their approach. It's like a
prequel.
A Harry Potter story. It's not part of the sort of the saga of Harry Potter. But I think this opens doors. And I know she said, J.K. Rowling has said that she's got a bunch of ideas for stories. I think we could see this turn into something similar. But having said that, this is like a once in a generation kind of thing. Star Wars was ours. Maybe Harry Potter will have a similar sort of massive fandom spanning generations. And who knows when the next one will be, 20, 30 years down the road. But they certainly are very rare, and maybe I'm wrong about Harry Potter even. Maybe Potter won't. It certainly isn't what Star Wars is yet. And maybe it'll never get there. But I do think there's a lot of kids who love those books and who love those stories. And it feels like, I work in a high school and I'm around, you know, I have younger kids and nieces and nephews, and Harry Potter feels like, talking to kids about it, the excitement and the make-believe feels a lot like Star Wars did to me as a young kid. What do you guys think about that one?
Dude, you took the words again right out of my mouth. Like, first of all, my answer was, it's really hard to imagine anything that can be as generation-spanning as a saga as Star Wars. But my first thought when I started thinking, I said, okay, what films can really do this, like, you know, or have done it? And again, yeah, Harry Potter was the one I have on my list as well. I love
the only one that's, yeah,
I love it, man. And yeah, like there's lots of movies and there's lots of possibilities for more movies to come, plus they have the theme park, but I just, it's a few tiers below Star Wars fandom and hype.
No doubt.
But well, I mean, Star Wars has got, what, a 20-something year head start?
Yeah, exactly.
More.
Yeah, more. Like, what, the first Potter movie came out, what, 2001 or so?
But Star Wars is just bigger, right, too, still. Like, it's... Don't get me wrong, Harry Potter's great, but, you know, I don't think...
Well, yeah, I mean...
The movie that's coming out this month, what's it called? Is it Magical Beasts and Where to Find Them or something?
Yeah, like,
Fantastic Beasts.
That just came out Friday.
How do you think that's going to do compared to Rogue One? You know, like...
I think it'll give it a run for its money, dude. I think it's not going to make as much money, but I think it's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's 11 o'clock on Sunday night right now. I bet you if you go and look, you can find the numbers for the Fantastic Beasts opening weekend. And you can pretty much project from opening weekend numbers how that movie will do. So whatever it did, I mean, I have no guess. I can't even imagine. But I'll say something like a $70 million weekend. And that'll translate to like a $200 million movie.
What about, I think...
Yeah, I bet it does even better than that. But yeah, you're right. That's a good guess because people are hungry for this, man. The fans, and they're out there, they've been hungry for this movie.
Yeah, and again, I think it's a clean sweep here. It's a clean sweep for the three of us that Harry Potter is the closest thing we have today, and it's all a matter of the legs it's got. Again, it's been around for such a relatively short time, 15 years, and this is what, the ninth Potter movie in that span.
Yep,
that's a lot, and I mean,
and it's magical too. It's got that feeling. You know, it's got some John Williams in there too. It's just awesome, you know?
I've never seen one of them, so I have no idea.
You're horrible. You should read them. Soon you should read them with your daughter. I'm telling you, they're great books, dude.
I do not need more reading material. That's the last
bedtime thing. Bedtime reading, 15 minutes a night.
She wants to read Star Wars.
Because you haven't even introduced her to Harry Potter yet.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, she'll find it. They all do.
Yep. If she finds it, I'll read it to her. What about Star Trek? I mean, it's been around for as a film franchise since the late 70s, and it's reinvigorated again. It's not quite the same thing, but they are sort of all one piece of a narrative, and
nah. I put the Bond franchise ahead of Star Trek in terms of, you know, comparing it to Star Wars. I think you've got a larger body of work on the big screen anyway, and just as much like generational love. Like
that's
like
a really
my
good
grandfather
point,
loves James
like,
Bond
that's
as much
true.
As
like,
as
my
you know,
dad
15 year old
kids. Bond.
Everybody loves Bond.
That's a really good
What's
point. I can't believe
love.
I didn't think of that.
Those are the three movie franchises I've got sort of on my notes here. Bond, Harry Potter, Star Trek. The only three movies that could possibly be in running here. Unless there's something else in the offing that has not even been conceived of yet.
I think
Marvel stuff.
Exactly.
Who knows what's going to happen with like... DC and Marvel in 25, 30 years, maybe superheroes are, you know, what Star Wars is now. It's possible.
Yeah,
that's what I was gonna say.
Possible.
If you can, that was my second one on the list. If you can have the Marvel Cinematic Universe as one saga narrative in a way,
I think the difference there though is that will get rebooted time and time again.
Yeah, fingers crossed. X-Men gets rebooted under the MCU.
Wow. I would love to see that happen. I can't see it happening.
It'd be best for everyone. Do it, Fox.
Avatar, Dark Horse there. Is that a Dark Horse in this race? Or is
no.
No. James Cameron's got
not
his
for me.
Four three sequels planned.
Yeah, back-to-back filming. He's got something. He's on to something. It's all about world building and, you know, just being captivating, having a good story and making it, like, magical, you know? Like, that's what Star Wars is. It's true. Like, you got to have something.
It's all about the magic.
Like, it is. Star Wars is all about that. It's not all about the bang bang and the explosions and stuff, you know? Like, you got to have some kind of intrigue, like the Force or, you know, magic or whatever it is.
Well, it's if you ask George Lucas, it's the family aspect. It's the soap opera in space.
Yeah.
Like George Lucas would say specifically, it's not about the spaceships and the blasters and this and that. It's the family. It's the characters. All right, so part two of Ad's question is directed specifically at Corey. So, Corey, you've got your speaking role in a Star Wars movie. You're going to get a line or two here. You've had a few minutes to think about this, so I don't know where your head is at, if you're emotionally prepared to handle this question. But what's your reaction when you read the script and you find out you're the guy, your character crushes Chopper, your guy, your little droid? Let's hear your reaction. I want to see how you try to bend reality so that either you don't have to do it or you somehow modify this to your will.
Well, you're going to get what you guys asked for. Like we had it on the back burners and we're messaging and, you know, you guys said, oh, we'll see how Corey like gets his, like works a looped hole through this thing. And first and foremost, I want to say if anyone's going to push the button, thank you Ads for making it me. Cause I love that droid so much. So if anyone had to do it, thank God, you know, I get to do it. So my real answer is no matter what I'm doing it, like good guy or bad guy, but you want to, I'm going to bend the rules a bit. And the quote that Ad basically says is fair play to the rust bucket. He put up a good fight. So that could be interpreted any way. And I'm going to interpret it in the sense that I'm his buddy and I'm a part of the Rebel Alliance and Chopper's kind of been hurt and there's no repairing him. So the line would kind of be read like this. Fair play to the rust bucket. He put up a good fight as I shed a tear. So I'm putting him out of his misery and, you know, everybody feels bad for me and I'm still the good guy.
But isn't the role assigned to you that of like an Imperial?
Nope. He just says, officer, there's your loophole, Ads. In your profession, you should be able to respect this.
You can never
do it, guys.
Okay, so I accept your loophole, but let me ask you a follow-up question. What if you have to be a bad guy?
I'm doing it.
And kill him in a bad way?
Better me than anyone else because it's still happening, right?
So you can console yourself with the idea that at least it's you who gets to do it, being his biggest fan?
Yeah.
I see that. That's I would like to pick apart that theory, but that or that logic, but that I see something to that. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I'm a winner either way. I'm in a Star Wars movie.
Would you be ballsy enough? I don't know if you need to take a shot of whiskey before you do it, but would you go up to the director and say, can we rewrite this scene, or is there some way we could just make it ambiguous as to whether or not Chopper lives? Like,
No, not at all.
Mind you, this is a minor speaking role that they'd recast, like just like that, if they had to.
No, of course not. My first thing, like, was actually the first way I written it when I said, you know, when I go all emotional, like, fair play to the rust bucket, basically. And as I shed a tear, the director would be like, "Yeah, that's not really the tone we're going for. Can you kind of mean it up a bit?" Or, you know, he'd direct me as to what he wanted. But
yeah, you just have to do as you're told. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. But I put Imperial my first goon. One out there. No one said Imperial.
All right, 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 right. See, Ads, what you have to learn as 35 years of experience with Corey the slippery eel is that you have to nail down exactly what you want. Because our parents used to give us chores as children. And one year, I think Corey was, I don't know, 9, 10 years old. It was Corey's turn to finally start cutting the grass. And so Corey cut the grass. But he did such a terrible job that my dad never asked him again. So the lesson is, Dad, if you're going to ask Corey to cut the grass, you have to say, Corey, I would like you to cut the grass well or properly.
Because you can ask Corey to cut the grass. Little turd. Maybe not when I was nine.
You know, you were given a several-year break after that.
That's such a common younger sibling move. We call that Ricoing it at this place. And that's M's younger brother. And it goes back to doing the laundry. But same thing, like the first time he got asked to do laundry, he
bleached everything.
I think he did it on purpose. But he did such a bad job that he never had to do it again. And so now whenever one of us is doing something and like I'm not that technologically adept. And so my wife is always like downloading software for me and figuring stuff out. And so whenever I try something for like 10 seconds, I'm like, I can't do this. Can you do this before I break the computer? She's like, you just recode that. It's a verb that we use.
That's awesome. Yeah, I supposedly, I don't know how to do laundry properly, so I don't do laundry.
So I wear dirty clothes.
No, they smell awesome and they're folded so perfectly.
Do you send them out?
No, not at all.
Laundry service? Because I have buddies who like hate laundry and they have laundry service. Single buddies, mind you, but yeah.
I'm a hater. I hate folding laundry.
Oh, we don't fold laundry in this house. It just goes into the drawers like that.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
We decided this after the second kid that laundry, it was taking up too much time folding laundry. And so now it just comes out of the dryer and into people's rooms, and then it goes into drawers just like that. I steam everything anyways. Like, I don't iron. I've got a clothes steamer. And so the stuff just comes out. I pop it on the hanger for like 10 seconds. Away we go.
That's amazing. We do fold.
Yeah.
But we do it on our Friday, Saturday nights. I'm actually ashamed to admit that here.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
That when my wife and I are downstairs catching up on our PVR watching, we're watching a movie, having a glass of wine, once the kids are in bed on a weekend night, also next to us is
a mountain
of laundry that needs to be folded.
I know, it's ridiculous.
And so I guess that's how we justify it. We're here just relaxing anyway. We may as well put some clean laundry in our hands, but yeah, why not just shove it back in the drawer as it is?
That's what's awesome. I don't fold. Yep. I don't fold laundry properly either, so I don't get to do that either.
All right. Well, hey, there was some good mileage out of Ad's question there. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Ad's, you're the man, and I'm going to title his autobiography since he asked us last week. I'm going to call Ad's autobiography "Knight's Ideas." Because he's a knight of the Commonwealth. He's always got these great ideas for the show. And knight's ideas, anagrams to Ads is the King.
No.
Oh.
No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. And it sounds like nice ideas. Well, that's...
solid.
That title is like an onion.
Layers.
And we're always recording at night while he's like sound asleep.
That's true too.
That is absolutely true. There's like four layers to that question. That's spectacular.
There you go, Ads.
Holy moly.
Well done, buddy.
We just call it quits there, wrap up the show, I mean, for good. Put a cap on at 50 episodes, punt Sith Disturbers to the moon, and that's it, guys. Wrap it up and retire.
To the super moon.
Oh, yeah. The overhyped super moon.
It was beautiful, Kyle. Get over it.
I'm over it.
He was never under it.
Okay, well, let's plow ahead here. We've got another voicemail this week from our good friend and amazing musician whose music we'll hear shortly here. It's Carlos. Let's check out what he has to say this week.
Tumbling Saber episode 50. Congratulations, boys, on a job well done. Cheers. And here's to many, many, many more. Your friendly neighborhood Carlos Candido right here, a.k.a. Darth Negan, with a question this week, which was meant for last week's show, and that's a long story which I will not get into. So here's the question. In The Force Awakens, Han Solo says to Ben, Snoke is using you for your powers. Once he gets what he wants, he won't need you anymore. You know I'm right. How does Han Solo know about Snoke? Was he good and turned dark? Was he deceptive like Palpatine? Or was he always bad? What are your thoughts? A side note, there's been 30 years between the episodes, 6 and 7, and it's left the writers 20 years, too many outs and possibilities to invent stuff as they go along. Now I assume they have plans to fill the gaps with other movies, but it makes me angry. How does it make you feel knowing that all the stuff you've previously learned is in the Legends category and not in canon? Let me know what you think. Love you guys. Cheers. Thanks for the support. I truly appreciate it. Carlos, out.
And there goes Carlos. Carlos always has interesting questions, and this week is no different. Thank you once again, Carlos, for chiming in episode 50. Good to hear from you. And so, James, how does Han Solo know about Snoke? It is a very interesting question. It was just laid out there so flatly in The Force Awakens. Leia blurts out his name. Snoke did it. And like Carlos alluded to, that Han said it so bluntly on that catwalk that he wants you for your power. So this guy seems to be very public, at least within that circle. So how did that happen?
Yeah, that is it's a great question. And I love listening to Carlos, not just play music and sing songs, but the way the guy talks is his gait and his... the way he speaks makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, I keep thinking back to his question that he asked the guys that talk Star Wars.
I know. Ugh. It's so good.
That's why I wanted to kick this off by saying that, you know, I was kind of hoping for more of a ranty, sweary, vulgar voicemail.
Carlos is considerate.
Yeah, but he knows we don't swear. So yeah, that's it. He didn't want to give the editor a bunch of beeping to do.
Well, Corey, are you aware of the content of Carlos's podcast?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Because if you want sweary ranty, there's a 30-some-odd episodes of Carlos sweary ranty that you can go and listen to your heart's content, and which I do.
It's funny. He makes me laugh. Did you listen to this? He put out a quick 30-minute one this week from the airport in Nova Scotia where, like, he's right beside the gate. And literally every 3 minutes, it's like...
3 minutes. It was like every 10 seconds.
Now boarding.
You know, if Carlos had a producer, there should have been like you said, James, like a bell, ding, for like a counter every time that he was interrupted, and you could just see his. I can imagine Carlos's blood pressure getting higher and higher as the interruptions rolled in.
That's what was so funny about it, because you could tell he was annoyed, but he was at the airport, so he couldn't be his typical like off the cuff 6 F-bombs per second self. So it was quite entertaining.
Yeah, I totally got my money's worth out of it.
To his question, yeah, it's a good one because I remember thinking about it briefly when we've talked about this quickly before, but not in a long time. I remember thinking, like, that is weird. Like, how is it that the bad guy nobody knows anything about is so well known to Han? And there's a couple possibilities, and once we find out who he is, maybe it'll be really obvious. But who Snoke is, I mean, but... It is possible that Han doesn't really know who Snoke is. He's just aware that that's who his son ran off with or to, if you know what I mean.
It's
possible he doesn't know Snoke, and he doesn't know anything more than we do in terms of his background, his identity. But he is aware that his son, you know, flipped the script and, you know, turned on Luke and attacked the academy and took off with this guy named Snoke. So that could be the extent of his knowledge. In which case, when he speaks that sentence, it's not like he has a whole bunch of more background knowledge than we do. He knows as much as we do, including a name, and that's it. You know,
that's absolutely a possibility, and it's one that makes sense. Corey, do you have any other thought, or do you want to play off that one?
My other thought was kind of basically. You know, I'm not through Bloodline yet, and I had ran this by you months ago, but I'm still not fully convinced that...
Hey, newsflash, everybody. Corey's not through Bloodline yet.
Okay. Either way, I don't think this message that Leia sends to Ben or Kylo like, I know, I feel like Snoke somehow manipulates whatever he, once he hears about Vader is what's going to make him tip, and that whole story is going to come to the fore. Maybe Han hears of it through Luke, and then Luke takes off. I don't get the feeling that Han knows him per se. He knows of him. Maybe you, again, were wrong, but...
Yeah, my thought on this is that at some point, and it's a story that we're going to see, there had to be some sort of convergence where the things were boiling to a crisis as far as the Skywalker family goes, the Skywalker solo family goes. Like, they know that they're close to losing Ben to this jerk named Snoke. And I don't know if it ends up being a battle of any kind, but I can imagine them all sort of being in the same place at the same time, where you have Snoke bending Ben's ear, where and with his family on the other side trying not to let him go.
That could be the battle of the last Jedi's or Luke's temple too. You know, maybe Han and Chewie made an appearance there at the last minute to help out and saw what his son was really capable of.
Yeah. Again, and we might learn more. I mean, the answers might be right around the corner, literally. The Empire's End, Part 3 of the Aftermath series is coming out, and if Gallius Rax, who's sort of the guy in charge of this burgeoning First Order, if Gallius Rax turns out to be Snoke, then a lot of these pieces start to fall into place. Where
I hate that name, by the way, Gallius Rax.
That's funny, because I hate the name Snoke. Like,
Gallius Rax sounds like every name that all of my 15-year-olds who write stories name their characters. Like, it's such a, I don't know.
That's why I think it's a short-lived name.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe Snoke is just, he's not that creative a guy, you know? Like, fiction is not his thing, and so he's going to dump the name.
From what the feedback that I get on Twitter from people who have read a lot of the books is that they hope it's not Gallius Rax, and they think it's not him either.
There are good reasons on both sides of that argument. Like, I think if it's not Snoke, then almost shame on them, on Chuck Wendig and the story group, because they make it so obvious at some points that it has to be Snoke. But then they throw you this curveball where he does something like he has like a little side fling going with one of the characters in the book, and it's like that's so not Snoke. That's so weird. It doesn't make any sense. So it can't be Snoke. But then this happens, and the way he's acting and what he's saying, there's really good reasons for it on both sides. And I guess it's done by design to make us ask questions, to keep us hanging, and to give themselves every opportunity to take the story where it needs to go. But yeah, to me, it's going to feel cheap. And I think Mark over at Talk Star Wars will feel the same way. It'll be a pretty dirty trick if Gallius Rax turns out not to be Snoke. But we don't have too long to wait. Empire's End comes out early 2017. So if he's going to... Oh, I can't imagine that they'll let that book end and not give us some sort of conclusion one way or the other. I don't know the exact date. It's, I think, I want to say January or maybe April of 2017. Yeah, I think it's April 2017. Hmm. Not too far. Okay. That's all I have to say about Snoke. I hate that name. I really hate that name. It's terrible. And again, I think that there's a convergence of events somewhere down the line between Ben, Luke, Leia, Han, and all ends up in this family showdown that they all lose. So part two of Carlos's question about what do we think of the old EU being discarded? James, do you have any thoughts? I know you didn't really read any of it.
So we've been doing this podcast for a year, and a year ago, if you would have asked me this, I would have said I have no thoughts because I didn't read it. But since, you know, talking to so many people and you know, with coming into Twitter and getting feedback and listening to views from people who have lost that EU stuff, I'll say I feel badly for fans who invested a lot of time in the EU, but I can't really relate to their loss. Like, I don't feel any of the things they feel when I hear that some character or some world or some storyline's been erased or changed. I can't relate because they don't mean anything to me personally. But I do have some empathy or sympathy for those who lost these things that were, you know, part of their Star Wars love and world. So,
but I mean, that stuff is still there.
Yeah, but it doesn't count.
Yeah,
it's like all the fan fiction that's out there for Star Wars. It's there, you know, but it doesn't count for anything.
Yeah, they should have called it something different instead of like Legends, or they should have called it like Parallel Universes or something.
Well, yeah, then you open the
opportunity. Why?
You open the possibility. Oh, well, then maybe these different parallel universes can somehow connect, and they can retcon, and then the Legends becomes canon. No,
it's true. That's more likely in Star Trek, but either way.
Well, they've kind of done that in Star Trek.
One thing about the EU, though, is that the EU, like, at least they tried their best to, like, respect one another's stories. Like, they tried to, you know, like, there was kind of a continuum there, a continuousness of, like, the saga where no one was stepping on each other's feet, and people were kind of watching the stories they wrote, and then it made sense. But not all the stories were that great.
Well, that's just it. There became so many of them that a lot of them turned out to be utter crap. And I read everything from, you know, the first Timothy Zahn trilogy.
Okay.
Well, even that, yes, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which I thought was terrible, absolutely terrible. But starting with the Thrawn trilogy, right up until Vector Prime, I read everything, and some of it was really good, including that Thrawn trilogy, and then some of it was just so bad. Oh my god. And then everything after that, I never even looked back on. I have no idea what came after that. But from what I've seen and read, it's a varying quality. And like James said, I feel bad for the people that have, you know, all the time and money that they put into this universe, this timeline that they've sunk their brains into. It's gone. It doesn't, like James said, it doesn't count for anything anymore at all.
No, it does count for some. You gotta look at it optimistically. Like, okay, it doesn't count. It's not canon anymore, but, you know, it filled that gap. It gave us, you know, it expanded our imaginations. It was still Star Wars at the time when you were reading it.
Right, but like the trap door has been opened beneath your feet, so to speak. Like, it doesn't count for anything anymore. Like that, all it takes is for one event to happen in Star Wars to completely nullify everything in the EU forever.
Well, don't get me wrong. I read them for like a good 10 years too, and probably stopped at about like, say, the age of 25 or so. But we've said this before, like, we have a great team working on Star Wars now. They don't have to be bound by these old stories anymore, and we can create something new. Like, yes, we're going to lose some love characters like Mara Jade and Jason and Jaina Solo. Like, these characters were really loved, but they could also, not necessarily maybe those characters, but they could still cherry pick from the EU or Legends now. Like, they've already done it with Thrawn. You know, there's cool characters like Prince Xizor or Dash Rendar. These characters can come back and they can retcon certain stories still and cherry pick the good stuff, more or less.
Well, and that's exactly what they're doing, which I think is a great olive branch.
Yeah. Yeah, at least there's that, right? And from what we've seen of Thrawn so far, like, I'm so not disappointed.
No, and you were the guy who was skeptical.
Yeah.
You weren't impressed that they were bringing him back, and now he is back, and you keep doing his impersonation.
Yeah, Lars Mikkelsen is killing it. It's
definitely is. Yeah, I mean, I kind of fall into that camp where I'm glad for the fresh start, and I'm sure the story group has sat together and they're going to plan this out in a very unified way, so to speak, where everything's going to play into one another. Whereas before, it was much harder when you had so many different authors. You know, one story would take place 30 years after, and then, oh, the next novels that came out, oh, these take place 5 years after. So everything got really convoluted, and I don't know that there was any QA, so to speak. So I'm glad that they've taken this step to wipe the slate clean and build a story from scratch that all ties together and makes sense. And like you said, Corey, if they want to pull things from the EU that fans loved and that makes sense to bring back to life, do it. Like, Thrawn is great. And we think that possibly Dash Rendar is coming back. We saw what very much looks like the Outrider in the upcoming episode of Rebels. If they bring him back, fantastic. Just be damn sure you get it right. So
I have to say, though, out of the whole expanded universe, there's one storyline that I really think should be considered canon, seeing as how they made a video game about it, and they had a whole toy line on it as well, was Shadows of the Empire, which is a great story taking place between Empire and Jedi. Really good story.
Yeah, that was solid. But I think that's official Legends now, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably, which is kind of sad. That one kind of gets me a bit, because that time gap, I hope, whenever they cover it, because they have to, I mean, in comics, wherever it's going to be, like, I hope they bring Prince Sizor back and that whole storyline, because that helps Luke on his journey to becoming a Jedi.
Yep. But, you know, where the Legends thing completely loses me is all the horrible behavior from some sections of that Bring Back Legends community. The harassment and the hate, and sometimes like threats directed at guys like Chuck Wendig. Like, I have no patience for that. I have no patience for the people that stormed the Amazon review section and just left awful reviews just to sink his book in the rankings. That to me is absolutely boorish behavior. And I have no time for it.
No. No, 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 no.
So that's that. I'm going to end the show on a bit of a sour note, but that's okay, because we'll close out episode 50, and we're going to be around for another 50, I think. So I think that's a wrap, guys, for episode 50. Any final words before we close up shop tonight?
Congrats, Kyle. I'm proud of you, man. We did it.
Well, guys, I'm not going anywhere without you guys here week after week. So thank you to you two. James, how you feeling over there? How's the throat holding up?
Yeah, I feel great, actually. I've been sort of dragging my rear end around this place all weekend. This is the best I felt, so let's get to it.
The effect of the force,
this is a fun show, actually, and 50 episodes, that's a significant milestone, so I'm glad we mentioned it a couple of times. It's been a fun year, man.
Yeah, it's been a lot more work than I had originally thought, but it's all been worth it. It's been really fun engaging with Star Wars fandom. We've made a lot of friends along the way. And it's pretty crazy how things have gone from a year ago to now, where we have this podcast up and running. Like I said, a whole bunch of new friends. The Star Wars Commonwealth is up and running. Who knows?
It's crazy if you think about it. The list, like, from, you know, Connor, Dave Donovan, Randomitable, Ads,
Carlos, you know, the Steven.
Is Carlos Candido, Steve, and
Mr. Matt Keegan in Australia. The list goes on and on, and it's not our intent to forget anybody here, but yeah.
No, I wanted to do some shout-outs just to name some of the names of these people who were, you know, we get feedback from, and questions and interaction, and I just, it's fun. It's there's an actual community out there now. Not to mention the rest of the Commonwealth. It's been a fun year, and I think we've grown quite a bit, so I'm looking forward to the next one.
Absolutely. And well, with that, thank you, Ads. Thank you, Carlos, for the great questions this week. The show would have been much, much shorter without you two this week. And thanks to everyone for listening. Be sure to check out the Skyhoppers podcast, like I mentioned off the top, and the rest of the Star Wars Commonwealth. And of course, the shows on our network include Talk Star Wars, Gen X-Wing, Rogue Squadron podcast, and Skyhoppers. And be sure to leave us a review on iTunes, and stay tuned for Sith Disturbers on Thursday. Bye for now.
Watching you walking away from me. Were you watching?